My name is Trina Teeler and I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for Anthony Gormley's One Another. The date is the 4th of October and it's 9:15. Could you please state your name, age and where you're from?
Yes, my name is Samantha Lydiate. That's Lydiate. I'm 39 years old and I'm from Abbeywood in South East London.
And how are you today?
I'm fabulous, terribly nervous, but absolutely fabulous. It's just, I was talking to one of the colleagues outside and I actually asked her to tap me on the back of the hand because I can't believe this is actually happening. It's just, yeah, I'm in a really, really good place right now. It's great.
And how did you find out about the project?
I'd heard about it in the papers and on the news and things like that. And on BBC London News and things like that. At the time, it didn't really register in my consciousness until a friend of mine actually said that she'd been chosen to go on the plinth. And I thought, why not? You know, and that's how I found out about it. So I just went on the internet, found out a bit more about it and applied.
And what initially made you want to take part?
Curiosity. Curiosity was the mainstay of all this. I'm an extrovert by heart, but I am also very painfully shy. I sing with the band, and I guess it was just something else that I could add to my life story to say that I've actually done. You know, there's no real political agenda or anything like that behind it. It was actually just pure and utter curiosity.
So how does it feel to have been picked out of all these people to be one out of 2,400 plinthers?
If you could see me now, I've just got the biggest grin on my face right now. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I actually, when I was filling in my application, I filled it in never ever dreaming that I would actually get chosen. You know, I filled it in honestly and truthfully, you know, and I thought, out of all of these people, you know, and it explained that it does the draw once a month, and if you didn't get picked, then, you know, never mind, and all of that. So when I got two no's for August and September, I thought, oh, well, never mind. And then halfway through the month, I get an email saying, congratulations, you've been chosen. And I suddenly thought, oh, my God, what the hell am I going to do now? Because now I've been picked. I've got to now find something to do. And then all the fun started and I accepted it straight away just in case I forgot. And then I suddenly sat back and thought, right, what am I going to do with my hour? How am I going to do this? And the obvious answer from everybody I spoke to was, Sam, you've got to sing. You've got to sing. So I phoned up and checked that it was okay. And here I am, just about to go up probably to the biggest audience I've ever sung to in my life at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night in October 2009. And it's a dream come true. It really is a dream come true.
So have you been singing for a long time then?
Yeah, I've been singing ever since I was a little girl. I was in school choirs and that, church choirs. And, you know, I've been singing in pubs and clubs with my band, Diva. I also sing as a solo artist and I do DJing and karaoke nights and the whole thing, you know. Mainly the karaoke is practice for me, if I'm totally honest, but I just love singing, you know. I cannot imagine ever not being able to sing. I sing in the shower, I sing in the car, I sing when I'm sitting at traffic lights waiting for the traffic lights to change. I'm singing at the top of my voice. And I look over to my left or my right and see the people in the car next to me looking at me. And I just take a bow. But I do. I just love to sing. You know, I'm blessed with a good voice and I'm very, very lucky with what I've got. And, you know, I can't think of anything I'd rather do. And to tie that in also with raising money for a very, very good cause, which is dear to my heart, which is Cancer Research UK. I've lost three people in the past 2 years to cancer, one of whom was a guitarist. It's a very, very good friend of mine, Brian Matthews, who played with the Deep Purple tribute band. He had lung cancer, didn't tell anybody about it. And I got a call one day saying, Sam, are you sitting down? Brian's dead. And then after that, I lost my godfather, who was a professional keyboard player, to colon cancer. And then my sister-in-law's dad soon after that. So this year has been a very, very big year for me for fundraising for cancer research. I've raised £3,000 for the charity with the Relay for Life that they do in Harrow and Ruislip. And I've also been pledged tonight to sing on the plinth. And I also have a big yellow plastic duck. Yes, duck. Which is going on the plinth with me. Stop laughing. He's going on the plinth with me. And on production of this duck, a sizable donation is going to be made to the charity. So... I will be sharing my time on the plinth, not with another human, but with a big plastic yellow duck.
So why did you decide to take a big plastic yellow duck?
Well, it goes back to the Relay for Life that I was just telling you about. It's a team event to raise money for cancer research, and you walk laps of a running track. And there were 24 teams there, and one of the team games that they have going throughout the day was to find this duck. So they would... the DJ would announce, right, the duck's gone missing, you've got half an hour to find the duck, bring it back to the stage. So every team would nominate a team member to go and search the whole length and breadth of this running track and the buildings and all the undergrowth around it and the tents and everything else to try and find this duck. So at the end of the event, we kidnapped it and we wrote a ransom note to the organiser of the Harrow and Ruislip Relay to say that we've got this duck. If you want it back, we want a donation to charity. And he says yes. So that's why. So I've been looking after the duck. He has enjoyed his captivity, I have to say. He's been very good. He hasn't really complained too much. He did kind of hog the Nintendo Wii for a while he was in my captivity. But, you know, I treated him well. I kept him fed and water, put him in the bath every day. He was very happy. I don't think he actually wants to go home, but, you know, he's got to come to an end and I've got to give him back to his owner. Oh, dear.
So is that how you raise money for charity through these events for the cancer research? Or how else did you go about raising money, raising £3,000?
We did a couple of boot sales. We also did a bucket rattle at Morrison's Stores. Morrison's Stores, the chosen charity this year for Morrison's is Cancer Research UK, so we were their nominated charity. So all the stores throughout the country have been joining forces with Cancer Research UK to raise money. I'm not a spokesman for them. I'm just a normal person who has been touched by cancer and had people in her family been touched by cancer. You know, so all I want to do is actually raise a profile of the charity and the work that it does. And this is my way of doing it. But for part of the team, for the relay, you know, we all had a team fundraising target of £1,500. So we doubled our fundraising this year with boot sales and with bucket rattles and all things like that. And then on the day, our stall, which was a Hook the Duck stall, the money we raised on the stall actually goes towards the total. And I think so far, the whole event has raised over £50,000. Which is pretty good. Last year it was about 70,000. Bearing in mind we've got a recession this year, that ain't too bad.
So, did you say you've been touched by cancer?
Not me personally, but my family has. You know, with my sister-in-law's dad dying, and you know, there's a bang. I'll start again. It's just the kind of disease that is cunning, baffling, powerful, and in some cases ultimately fatal. And the more, you know, the more that can be done to raise a profile of that charity, just, you know, it can only be good. You know, we hear every day of the, you know, that like the new injection for teenage girls for cervical cancer, you know, things like that. One in three people will be directly touched by cancer in their life. You know, one in eight will know somebody who's been touched by cancer. And those statistics need to change. They really need to change. I mean, touch wood, it won't be me, but who's to say that somebody in my direct family won't you know, suffer with cancer. I gave up smoking 2 years ago because I didn't, you know, I wanted to minimise my chances of getting it. But so far, thank God, we have been very, very lucky in our family. But, you know, Val's dad, just, that was it. I knew I had to do something to help. So.
And just going back to you singing, you say you're a singer, you're raising money for charity, mm-hmm. cancer in this case. Do you do any other work apart from that, or is that your full-time job?
It used to be, but no, I work on the Olympic site in Stratford. So yeah, I was unemployed before that. Came out of the property business. I was a property manager, and then before that, I was working for St John Ambulance. Then before that, I was at the BBC for 10 years. So I've been about a bit, but yeah, I'm working on the Olympics for a company called Bam Nuttall, who are doing the landscaping project, and it is the best place to work right now. It is absolutely brilliant. I love my job. Very long hours. But you know what? It's worth every minute of it. It's just such a good place to work. You know, we're striving to be the greenest Olympics going. You know, everybody gets to work by public transport. We don't allow any private cars on the site. We maximise recycling where we can. You know, we look to employ local workforces within the five boroughs that are affected directly by the Olympics. So places like Newham, Hackney, and places like that, or the five East London boroughs where the Olympics is actually being built. Most of the workforce that they're trying to actually employ come from those five London boroughs. I'm a different case because I live in South East London. So, but you know, I was unemployed and I only found out about it by going to the job centre. You know, so the job centres aren't all that bad. You know, they found me a job. You know, and because of that, I'm now absolutely loving it. You know, and it's great. You go to work and your environment changes every single day, you know, and you can actually see everything being built and, you know, you can see the changes that are going around. And if I had a pound for every single person that says, are we going to be on time? I'd be a millionaire. We have to be on time. We are actually, in all honesty, we're actually ahead of schedule. So about 3 months ahead of schedule. You know, things are going really well. It's all progressing rather nicely, and yeah, we are officially ahead of schedule.
So what would you say your job title, your role is on it?
I'm a secretary to the project manager for the landscaping project, so that entails all the grasslands, the trees, the plants, all the banks, the river banks, the wetlands. They're actually going to be creating ecosystems within the Olympic Park for wildlife to naturally cultivate and naturally grow and naturally progress and things like that. So it's actually going to be there, and they're going to actually encourage the wildlife to actually stay there. When the Olympics is actually done and dusted, what we then do is actually give it back to the local people, give it back to the local authorities in legacy. So it's going to be a parkland for them to use. And for the families and for the next generation. So it'll actually be there permanently for this generation and the next and the next and the next. And to be a part of that is something pretty magnificent, actually.
And what was it you did at the BBC?
At the BBC, I started off as a secretary, and then I worked in radio production. Then I worked as a journalist, and then I worked in TV, and I was actually there when the digital takeover took place. Which sounds a bit grand, but it's not. You're still in a dark studio somewhere in Southwest London, somewhere in West London, sorry. I just loved working on radio. I started actually working in radio when I was 17 as a presenter, hence the voice. I've been a DJ ever since I was 17. Worked on a local radio station called Radio Thamesmead. Went from there straight to the BBC, and there I cut my teeth in radio production. I moved over to TV for the last 5 or 6 years, working in TV presentation, actually working at the sharp end, putting the tapes in and pressing play. So EastEnders had to go out at 7:30 on a Tuesday and a Thursday without fail, or my neck was on the line, you know. So, and then I left and took a sabbatical, worked in Geneva for a year, worked for the European Broadcast Union, working lots and lots of very, very big satellite dishes and all things like that. And then came back and joined St John Ambulance and worked as an ambulance driver for a couple of years, which was brilliant fun, beetling around the streets at God knows what miles an hour with blue lights on. That's pretty cool.
In London?
In the surrounds. I was working out of King's, at King's College Hospital in Denmark Hill. And then, yeah, when I left there, I didn't really know what to do, to be honest. That's when the singing really took off, and I actually ended up basically singing for my supper. Then I thought, you know what, I'm missing out on everything. I'm always the one providing the entertainment. When my mum's phoning me saying, it's your dad's birthday, what are you doing? I'm gigging. It's your brother's birthday, what are you doing? I'm gigging. So I cut back on that and went into property. And then we hit a recession, so I had to leave. And then that's when I found the job at the Olympics. So potted history.
So before the Olympics, you worked in property?
Yes. Yeah, I was a property manager. Really bad time to go into property management because everybody was cutting back. Nobody was renting. People were renting, but they couldn't pay for property management. So it was unworkable. I wasn't really very happy doing that. So the best thing I ever did was leave, to be honest. So
you've got quite a variation of jobs going on there. How did that come about?
It's back to my curiosity again, I'm afraid. This is what I do. I'm a naturally curious person. My outlook on life is I'll try anything once. If I like it, I'll do it again. If I don't like it, I can say I tried it. You know? And that is the kind of person I am. I love experiencing life. My mum was talking to me earlier on, just before I came up here, and she said, Samantha, she said, you do things. And she's right, I do. I just like to try things out, you know, because it's all, you're only here once, you know. And for those who do believe in reincarnation, I do apologise, but, you know, if you're only here, if you're only on this earth once, make the best of it, you know. I never ever want to lay on my deathbed thinking I regret something or regret not doing something, you know. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity to be a part of this with Anthony Gormley and the rest of the team, you know, and I intend to make the best use of that hour that I can. And if I can put a smile on somebody's face as they walk by, maybe cheer them up a bit, then you know what, I've done my job. Can't say fairer than that.
And what would you say is important to you at this moment in time?
This moment in time, hoping my voice is going to sound good. Putting a smile on somebody's face. Giving somebody a little bit of something nice as they go home or as they walk through London. Live life to the full. Carpe diem, seize the day. And go home with a smile on my face. And, you know, to say, yeah, I've been a part of something big, you know, I've been a part of something. This may not ever happen again. Who knows? You know? Just enjoy life, you know? Smile. If you've annoyed somebody, apologise, you know? If you love somebody, tell them, you know? Don't ever, ever regret anything in your life.
And would you say you're doing it for somebody in particular?
You know what? I didn't think I was, but yes, I am. I'm doing it for Val, my sister-in-law, who lost her dad. I'm doing it for my auntie Kathy, who lost her husband, my uncle Jerry. I'm doing it for Gavin Matthews, Brian's brother. I'm doing it for the new man in my life, Fred, who I know just texted me before I came in to do the interview. And I'm doing it for everybody that and anybody that's just, you know, wanting to be cheered up and give a little bit of hope back.
And how long have you been with Fred?
Only a week. Yeah, literally only a week. This smile has never left my face, put it that way. I'm very, very lucky. Very, very lucky. He's a lovely guy. I think he thinks I'm mad, but I think that's a good thing because I probably am. Fred's just, he's just a really nice guy. He's very, very, he's a gentleman, actually. He is a gentleman. We met in a pub where I was doing karaoke. And we just hit it off. So I've written a little message to him on a card that I'm going to lay on the floor. So hopefully one of the cameras will pick that up. He's working tonight, so sadly he can't be here. But he said he's going to try and find an internet cafe and watch it online. But my ex is going to be in the audience as well. He's my best friend now. It was actually him that I started working when I was at Radio Thamesmead over 20 years ago, and we're still really close. We're still good friends. So and he's going to be here. There's about 20 odd people that are going to be here, and it's going to be mad, absolutely mad. And I'm rambling, I'm so sorry, but I'm really excited. I'm nervous, I'm excited, I'm petrified, I'm thrilled, I'm honoured. I've got river dance going on in my stomach right now. But I think somebody said it's great to be nervous because it means you care. So, yeah.
Are you going to involve the audience?
I think so, yes, because we're going to be doing a bit of S Club 7. So we're going to be doing Reach. And we're going to be doing Young Hearts Run Free, which I know is a good sing-along song. And we're going to be doing Simply the Best by Tina Turner, which is one of the Wavy Army, you know, Arms in the Air song. Somebody did ask me to sing 500 Miles by the Proclaimers, but I think even that's beyond me. Charity or no charity, I've got limits. So, yeah, it's just going to be, yeah, whatever. I like to sing kind of really upbeat, you know, have a little bit of a boogie, you know, have a little bit of a dance, have a little bit of a laugh. I'm going to be asking people to text me messages so I can read them out as well. And I've got a few messages to read out for people. It's just going to be a bit of good fun, I hope.
And how else are you going to involve them?
That's pretty much it, to be honest. If they want to sing along, you know, by all means. I did have a plan that a friend of mine who's a guitarist was going to come up with a ukulele and just emerge out of the crowd, and we were going to do a duet together. But with the sound the way it is, it's going to be really, really difficult. So that kind of got knocked on the head. But I'm just going to sort of just encourage people to turn to the person next to them and say hello, and then turn to the person the other way and say hello. And, you know, just kind of get a little bit of a dialogue, get a bit of loving going on. So, yeah, I think that might be quite fun.
And what kind of music do you play with your band?
With the band, Diva, is jazz, funk, soul, that kind of thing. Me personally doing solo work, I do what I call good old-fashioned party tunes. So it's the 70s, 80s, 90s. But with the band, it's jazz and funk. Show tunes, a bit of soul, a bit of blues. So we've been together now for about 2 years. We formed out of the ashes of the previous band I was with. Me and the drummer decided to keep together and actually form Diva. Before that, I was with a band called Hit Squad. And we did like functions and parties and that kind of thing, pubs and clubs, working men's clubs. And we were just straight covers. So rock, funk, soul, disco covers. Diva's more a performance. It's based on the film Cabaret with Liza Minnelli. So it's very dark, very mysterious. You know, it's me being the diva and my boys behind me as the beautiful orchestra. And it's a performance, it's a show, what we do. And I am very, very much, I've got a radio mic, so I go out and I sit on people's laps and I play with their hair. And if it's a guy, I'll play with his tie, flick it over his shoulder and stroke his face and this, that and the other and croon to him, you know. So I'm very much I was going to say a performance artist, but I'm not sure if that's the right phrase. But I'm very much, it's not me singer, you audience, you listen, I sing. It's let's have one big happy party together. And that's what I do. I go out and involve people. So if the plinth were a little bit lower and the audience were a little bit higher, then I could do that. But yeah, it's going to be that kind of thing. It's going to be good fun.
So has the artist, Anthony Gormley's view to democratise art, has that influenced your decision to be here today?
I'm not sure if it goes as deep as that for me. For me, it was all about taking part in something and making history and giving something back to London, giving something back to the people of London. It's very much actually being part of something that hopefully will go down in history and be talked about in 10, 15, 20 years' time. My view is that London doesn't have enough freedom of speech. London doesn't have enough places, apart from Hyde Park, but even then that's policed. It doesn't have enough freedom to do what it wants. We are being strangled by current policies in things like what we can say, how we can say it, who we offend, who we don't offend, being offended on behalf of somebody else, that kind of thing. And I think that's really, really tragic because, you know, I can't go around with my life trying to second guess that the next words out of my mouth might offend someone, you know. And the fact that some people can go up on that plinth and do what the hell they like for that hour and not be criticised and not be curtailed and not be censored, brilliant, go for it every day of the week. And I wish him every blessing. I'm just thrilled to actually be a part of this. Had I probably put more thought into it, maybe I could have done something a little bit more political. But I'm very, very unbiased. I don't really have a strong political view, but I do believe in freedom of speech, and I do believe that in the past 10 years, you know, everything we say and everything we do is scrutinized, and I think that's really, really sad.
On that note, we're going to have to end, but thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.